join me in my search for the circular guitar. My name is Glenn van den Burg. I'm a Dutch radio and podcast host and owner of an online guitar store, neverenoughstrats.com. I will be talking to all kinds of experts and seasoned circular entrepreneurs to see what I have to do and see if it is at all possible to create the circular guitar. My first guide in this circular quest is Guido Braam. Guido is a social entrepreneur with a mission to create a more meaningful economy. He co-founded Circle Economy and later launched Holland Circular Hotspot. He wrote the book Circular Route, a roadmap for a circular business model. And today, Guido leads Powered by Meaning, a family of companies that all have a strong purpose in the heart of their business. So, a great first guide to start my quest. Hi Guido, thanks for being my first guide in my quest for the circular guitar, because, well, a quest it will be probably. I've just started out because I had this idea when I thought about this particular guitar.
There it is.
Fender Stratocaster. This is a, well, they call this the one the Splattercaster because it's so splattery with paint and all. But I was thinking about it when I was on a conference about sustainability and we were talking about circularity, and I was thinking like, well, perhaps this guitar, once designed in the 50s, like more than 70 years ago, maybe this guitar is already circular in the way that it was designed way back then. But I'm going to find out if it is so and if I can make a circular business model out of it. So first, in short, what is a circular business? What does it look like?
Well, yeah. And first of all, thank you that I'm here, that I can join your quest.
Sure.
I'm really honored. And I was really intrigued by it because I think we talk a lot about circularity, but this makes it really tangible.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't it be cool that by the end of this endeavor, that in the end you can hold this Fender, this first circular Fender, and then the rest of the world can just learn from how to do the same, probably with other products. But this is really appealing.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, because that is, maybe it will never see the light of day, but I think the quest for it makes it really tangible and makes something like the circular economy, which is so huge and big and complex, makes it, well, tangible and easy to think about, because it's just a thing that everybody knows what it looks like, how you can hold it and what you can do with it.
Yeah.
So, circular business. What is a circular business?
What's a circular
when
business?
Is a business a circular business?
I think you start off with a good question, because there are a lot of people, like we said, there are a lot of people that are an expert in talking about what circularity is. But I think the interesting part why I stepped into the circular economy that really triggered me was that there is a sort of a potential for entrepreneurs in the circular economy.
Mm-hmm.
It has the sort of the logic of preserving value. The way I explain circular economy in general is that we need to switch to an economy that has more appreciation and values more the value of the product itself. So if we go back to the production stage, you put in materials, you put in energy, you put in labor forces, and then you want to preserve that value as long as possible. That's much more logical than saying by 1 year or 2 years, okay, now the product is done, we recycled it, we will recycle it, we will retrieve materials, and we've lost all the input that we've put in from the start.
Ah, okay.
So for me, the circular economy is much more about to be innovative, to find solutions that are incentivized preservation of value, and that the companies that step into this are rewarded for that. So a circular economy is in contradiction to a linear economy, focusing on preserving value and making sure that companies can benefit from that.
All right. So if we make it really practical within my business, one of my businesses, but the guitar business that we're talking about, it's really simple. I buy used guitars, mostly used guitars, like 95% of all the guitars that I have are already used. I buy them. They go to my guitar tech. He checks them out. He does some maintenance if it's necessary. He does a nice setup so they play really nice. And after that, I put them on my website and I sell them.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. So that, I mean, then you already have a part of the business model, don't you? I mean, the part of the circular business model is that the guitar itself is still very valuable. And then you have a certified program to make it, to refurbish it and to make it even more valuable when it was brought back to you. So yeah, you add some value to it because you, yeah, you do the maintenance, you make sure that it's up to date again. So that's where you add the value as an entrepreneur. And it's very logical because the guitar is still fine, even perhaps even better, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing about this business is that this guitar over here, I think this one is from the 2000s somewhere, and it's almost identical to the one that was designed in 1954.
Oh, really?
And even so, if it was from 1954, it would be very expensive.
Yeah.
So vintage guitars from 1954 until, well, approximately beginning of the 70s are quite valuable, and especially how older they are,
the more valuable they'll
get.
But then I just was talking about what's the circular economy, and I was talking about preserving value, but you are not saying, no, preserving value is not enough. It needs to increase in value. And every time it comes back to you, to your business, the company you own, and then you make sure that it can last longer and more people can enjoy what's already produced, in this case, in 2000.
Yeah.
So then for you, would it be logical that no new guitars need to be produced anymore?
Well, I've been thinking about that, of course. But it's how many guitars does one person need?
Well,
a few, I would say, because there are different kinds of guitars, of course. There are some guitar players that have 10, 20, 50, 100, and even more. There are even players that have more than 100 guitars.
Really? And they still have two hands, right?
They still have two hands, and only, yeah, you can only play one at a time, like my wife always says. I would say that there are enough guitars in the world at this moment so that everybody can have more than one guitar who plays guitars. It's really hard to get numbers. So I asked ChatGPT to come up with some numbers and not hallucinate numbers, but really get numbers from the internet, from research. But it's really tough to find some really, because it's a small business, the guitar business worldwide.
Yeah. Is that part of the quest, by the way, just to find out the facts and figures, to know what we're talking about in terms of number of guitars and the materials that are used?
Well, my business is really small. I sold like 95 guitars last year.
Yesterday we're saying that's the ambition that you have there.
The ambition is to sell some more, but the ambition is not to be the world leader, and I probably will never be. The quest is more interesting than the end result, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But because we are, especially in the West, we're getting older, less people are playing guitar in the West, especially in Europe. They do predict that the guitar market will grow in the next couple of 10 years for like 6 or 7% over the 10 years, mm-hmm. which is not a lot, but it's still growing. I think probably, but the numbers don't say that. Probably because people will be buying more expensive guitars, better guitars, when they're getting older, and everybody is getting older. So there's a lot of people there now, 40 or 50, like me, who think, well, I can afford a better guitar, so I'm going to buy a better guitar. But I think there are almost enough guitars in the world.
Yeah.
Because they last a lifetime.
I mean, and that's what we're talking about. And if we talk about making things tangible, the producers of guitars probably also passionate about playing guitar, designed a guitar that is there to last, because they don't want to have an inferior product that you can just, that you need to throw away. Just like if you made comparison to apparel, ultra fast fashion, you use it 2-3 times and you have to throw it away. It's ridiculous, of course, also in terms of how we pollute the earth with that. But the guitar is a product that, with a lot of passion and a lot of people that relate to that. So it's a lasting product and it can last even longer. And especially in markets where there is sort of saturation, and I don't think that 6 or 7% is a small number. I mean, it's a growing market then still. But then it becomes more interesting for the producers to rethink their business model. Because either you want to promote that more people play guitar, but yeah, well, there's a limit to that. Or you focus much more on that you are rewarded for the maintenance, that you are rewarded to come up with services to back up all these enthusiastic guitar players around the globe. And we've seen that more often, of course, in other businesses that they needed to switch from producing to, well, transforming into a more a service kind of company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I see is that guitar players like to get new stuff.
Mm.
It's even kind of a culture amongst guitar players to always be checking out new or vintage, but other guitars that you don't yet own. So there's also like kind of a hedonistic part on it.
Okay.
There's also a search for sounding like Jimi Hendrix, sounding like Eric Clapton. So owning a guitar that is has the same specs as the Hendrix guitar, and then Hendrix also played at the live show on this and that. He played another guitar then on that and that. So you can go crazy with that.
I can imagine.
So there is a market for changing guitars, trying out new guitars, I think. But I don't think everybody needs to own a lot of them.
No, I can imagine that you need a variety of the guitars and that you are curious about having something else. But you were also mentioning something else, and you say you talked in general, but I'm very curious because you are a passionate guitar player yourself, that sort of the hedonistic part of it, owning a new guitar. What happens when you unwrap this guitar with you?
I mean, if you go on Instagram and you just search for new arrivals or unboxing of Fender Strats, or you get loads of videos. There are even guys, most guitars are in a guitar case and it has these latches.
Click open,
and they even get sounds. The microphone
of course.
Near the latch to hear what the sound of the latch is, which is...
But it feels like you're in a movie, right? That you are about to go on stage and you open the box and then you hear that sound. Yeah, I can imagine that it feels like this is an amazing feeling. But it's instant satisfaction, but it's very short, right?
Yes, it is. It's like owning a new car. After a few weeks or maybe a few months, that feeling is gone and you're still the same guitar player. I mean, maybe the guitar plays a bit better than the previous one, but you are still the same guitar player.
Input is output. That is what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, everybody needs to practice more. That's the simple thing. You hope for another guitar. Maybe it makes you sound a bit better, but you still have the most of the sound is in your fingers, of course.
It's all about the technique. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
But then you were referring to it when you have a new guitar and of course you unbox it and it's very shiny and all that. And do you have the same feeling when you have a vintage guitar yourself?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. So people who come over that buy a used guitar in my shop, they have the same feeling as if they bought a new guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It's even crazier. There is this thing called relicking, which is like aging your jeans.
Okay.
But then it's aging a guitar.
So it sort of has a new kind of feeling or something. Or it's a bit worn out.
It's worn out and sometimes even so worn out that it looks like it's been beaten and sanded down. And these guitars are more popular than the shiny new ones that don't have any scratches on.
Okay. So it has more character. It has more...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the interesting part is, because it's already worn down, if there is another a new scratch on it while using it, nobody knows.
No. Yeah. And but then, does it sound different as well if it aged over time?
The debate is still going. Yeah. It's like the Beatles and the Stones. You have the haters of relicking, like sanding down and aging a new guitar, and you have people that said, "Well, no, because the wood is more exposed, because the paint is aged and cracked." You know, they call it checked. Because of that, the wood can resonate better. Well, there's all these debates on that. A fact is that there's a very, very, very big market for those kinds of guitars that look like they are real vintage guitars from the 60s or the 50s, which are, for normal people, impossible to buy because they start out like 15, 20,000 euros.
Oh, yeah.
Really expensive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So then, it's good to hear. I mean, that also in the world of guitar lovers, that there is a debate going on, because that really resonates with the circular community I'm in, with all these circular nerds having these discussions where there is no end-to-end discussion,
mm-hmm.
because it's an opinion. And probably will never be a real sort of consensus about it. So it's good to hear that.
Yeah.
But if you're then saying that, because in your introduction you said, well, what I do myself is also that I take in these old guitars, and probably around the globe a lot of retailers do that. They take back the guitars.
Mm.
What are the parts that need to be refurbished?
Sometimes nothing, because you also have very young used guitars that are like a year or 2 years old. The thing that that gets worn out are the frets. So that's the iron parts, mm-hmm. on the neck. That is the part that's really wears out when you play it a lot. But you have to really play it a lot to make sure that it's really worn out. But there is a technique that's called leveling.
Okay.
So what a guitar tech then does is that he sands down the frets to make sure that they are nice and level again. And after that, it just plays like a new guitar. And you can do that a number of times until the fret, because they're made of nickel, until the frets are too thin. Yeah. And then you have to take out the frets. They call it refretting.
Okay.
So you take off the frets, which is quite labor intensive. Costs are about 300 euros. So it's also quite expensive.
Yeah.
You put in new frets. Then you have, again, it's like playing a new guitar.
And then the refretting is mostly expensive because of the labor hours that goes into
yes,
that.
Yes, so definitely.
If we would design it in another kind of way, would it be easier?
Well, it was, the Stratocaster was designed that if there was something wrong with the neck, like the frets being worn out, you could just take off the neck and put on a new neck. So that was the
modular guitar.
That was the design thought behind the guitar, because before the Strat was developed, or before the Telecaster, because that was earlier, they call this the bolt-on neck. So it has just has four screws that you screw it on. Before that time, they made guitars where the neck was glued to the body.
Mm-hmm.
So if it broke or something was wrong with it, you could just throw away the whole guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the
steps,
smart things I think they did with this guitar. So to make it, and it goes with everything. So everything that's on the guitar is either screwed together or it's just loose, like the tip of this thing. You can just take it off.
Yeah, yeah, I can tell.
And the knobs, you can just take them off,
yeah.
Which is really funny. The only thing that's really stuck together is the pickups and the wiring is soldered together.
Okay, yeah.
But also that you can just take off by heating the solder again, and you can take it apart.
So in the quest for making a circular guitar, You can go all the way and have guitars as a service by the end, potentially. But there are also some other steps that are perhaps also already valuable, and that is refurbishing it like you're doing right now. But and it's already, in this case, the vendor already, Stratocaster already thought about how to replace parts that are worn out. And it's,
yeah,
if I look at it, it sounds, it sees, it feels like it, even I can do it, right?
If you have a Phillips head screwdriver, you can take most of the guitar apart.
Yeah. And well, those are the two things that I'm very unskilled in, playing guitars and unscrewing stuff. Yeah, but let's see.
Yeah. So now you have a bit of a picture of what the business looks like. It's really simple. Guitars come in. We fix them up a bit. Sometimes not even, just polish them, and then after that we sell them again. I sometimes also say I sell patience because somebody wants to sell his guitar, probably because he wants another one. And somebody wants to buy a guitar and they don't want to wait for months, check out eBay or check out Reverb, which is a like an eBay, but then only for musical instruments. They just, if you want something, you probably want it
now,
as soon as possible. And especially when you see one, you're like, oh, yeah,
I need to have it.
I love that one. Yeah, that color is so great. So next to the fact that I sell convenience, I also sell patience, because I have the patience to buy a guitar knowing that, well, there will, in the coming year, there will be somebody who wants it.
Yeah. So your part of your solution is also sort of, you keep them in stock and you have the patience and you make sure that the demand meets supply, and then you are.
It's kind of a library. The only problem is that people buy them and they don't return them.
That would be an easy step for you, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Would it? Because is that something that is part of the? So one part of the circular business is making sure that all the materials and the effort that is put into making a product, that you preserve that value. Is the other, what is the business model part of?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you were touching upon that topic several times when you mentioned what you were doing, because it's all about, if you want, as an entrepreneur, you have to have turnover, you have to have margins, of course. Mm. So if you produce something, you probably thought about, this is the bill of materials, these are the marketing costs, et cetera, et cetera. And then perhaps 20% or something like that. That's your margin eventually, perhaps even more, if you sell the guitar, and that's then the profit you will have by the end of the year, and you can reinvest. So now the business model all changes. So you have to think about, where is the turnover and is it the same amount? So what does it do with the fixed cost I have within my company? And where are the margins? Where are people willing to pay for? Mm. And yet you're selling patience. That's something that's a certain value, because people want to sell it right now. You are capable, quite finance intense, to buy all the guitars in the world. So if you would have that, then you would have a perfect lock-in, because everybody needs you, of course, if you want to hear the guitar. But no, but just kidding. But if you invest in that, that also costs money, because you need to have them in stock, and you need to present them on the website, and you need to finance this also. So capitalizing. So there is some interest there. Like interest on the capital you invest in this. So you're making, the business is totally different than producing. So you have to think about where do you add this value, and where can you ask the money for? But you were also touching upon a topic that's really interesting, that you're saying, probably when somebody is selling it, they're also looking for a new guitar. It says something about that you are in contact with the customer, with the person that loves to play guitar.
Yeah,
and I think most of the companies, if you compare it to other sectors, are forgetting that it is quite a tough job to get a good relationship with your customer. So you put in a lot of effort to get the customers in, then you sell them a guitar or something else, and then you never see them again, which is a pity, isn't it? And they call in investment terms, they call that churn, or they call that something like that. That how many customers can you retain? In case of being a service provider in a circular model, automatically you stay in contact with the guitar player. they come to you as soon as they have this urge for something new. They automatically start to think about Glenn, and then say, I have to bring back my guitar and I have to look for something else. So that's a unique moment. Normally, you have to pay a lot for that to have this moment with a potential customer. So there is something valuable in that.
Yeah, because it already happens at this moment, but at this moment it works like a linear model. So people contact me and say, "Well, I have this guitar. I want to part from it. What can you offer me as a trade-in? So how much money do I get for it? And can I then spend on one of your guitars?" And the going rate for a trade-in is like 75% of market value.
Yeah.
So I have clients that bought a guitar in the store, a new one, and after half a year, they're like, it's not really my thing. I used it on stage, or I used it practicing with my band, and it doesn't really do what I wanted it to do. So I want to part from it.
Mm.
And then it will cost you 25% of the value of the guitar.
In half a year.
And you know that if you walk out the door with a new guitar, then it's already like 15 or 20% less, because then it will be a used guitar. So you have 80% left. And of that 80%, you only get 75%. Yeah. So that's a really expensive half year.
Yeah.
And it happens like 10 or 15 times a year that I encounter that.
Yeah, and then consumers in general are not always rational in when they make a purchasing decision, right? And especially with this emotional product. So I think there's also the sort of, in the business-to-business scene, it's much more about total cost of ownership. Mm-hmm. And it's more logical that you test something out, and if it doesn't work, they can provide you with a new kind of product and then make sure that it suffices. But in terms of guitar playing, but also other products that need a little bit more of testing, and where there is a need to adapt and to change and to try new things and a variety, that's a perfect arena for platforms where you can use the guitar rather than buying the guitar, where you can lease the guitar rather than buying the whole new product.
Mm.
The thing is, and probably we'll touch upon that later, or perhaps you can ask somebody else also in this podcast, that has to do with skill. Because if these buyers come to you and they say, okay, I want to depart from this, what do you have to offer? Then you have the sort of the necessity to offer a lot, because otherwise, this is a typical sort of, how do you call that? A model where, a sort of a platform model where the buyers and sellers come together.
Mm-hmm.
And you need skill for that. So I was wondering, you were saying, well, I don't have the ambition to become the world leader in this. But then it might be necessary to be that, because you want to have this great variety of solutions for all these customers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the funny thing is that's why I, next to the fact that I just love the guitar, that's why I chose the Stratocaster as being the first guitar that I at this moment sell.
Yeah.
And after that, the Telecaster, because of all the guitars that Fender sells, about 50 to 60% of guitars are Stratocaster.
Yeah.
So it's like the Labrador of
everybody loves
of guitars.
Fender. Yeah.
I mean, there's probably some Stratocasters haters that don't have them, but
they want to be special. We don't like this because
a guitar player generally has a Strat.
Yeah.
So there's a big market for that. And what I wanted to add to that is that the strange thing is, you buy something that's quite expensive because, well, depending on which guitar you buy, it's 3,000 to 4,000 euros. Mm. So it's a lot of money. You try it out in an environment in which you are not going to use it. So in my case, you try it out in my home studio, in my house, and you can take all the time that you want, which is special. Normally, you go to a guitar shop. So you're in a guitar shop in a little booth that you can play the guitar, which is soundproof, on an amplifier that's not your amplifier. And you want to use it in your practice space or on stage.
Yeah.
But you can't try it out there. So that's also something that that doesn't really work as a service. I mean, it's like you're going to buy a car, and there's this little parking spot, and you can drive around the parking spot. And if you've done three rounds around the parking spot, then you have to decide, do you want to buy this car?
It's
nobody would do that.
No, I can. So you do a lot more research to buy that. But then if you're talking about 3,000 to 5,000 euros, and it depreciates in value with 25%, like you were saying, in half a year, you're talking about 1,200 euros.
Mm-hmm.
So there is your cap. There is the value of people that are willing to to switch also as a guitar player to a sort of the library model.
Yeah.
Because we can use all these fancy terms like as guitars as a service. That sounds nice. But it is the typical model of the library, that you have access to much more variety, that you have access to much more books, access to much more guitars. And that sometimes you're reading this book about this author, and then sometimes you need to do something else.
Yeah.
And in guitar is interesting because I can imagine that you need variety and that you're curious. That's our human nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we cannot. The thing about sustainability is that we become moralistic and say you have to choose your guitar when you're 16 or 12, and then you have to stick to that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Because that's good for the environment.
Yeah.
Which is not really realistic. So we have to, as entrepreneurs, be creative and come up with solutions that, fulfill the need for customers that say, I want variety, I want a personal development, I want to test things. I want to make sure that if I buy something, it doesn't depreciate in value by 25%, but I want to, bring it back and then collect something else.
Mm.
And I think you can make a business case out of that. And there are a lot of strings attached. To talk about strings, but a lot of strings attached.
You made a guitar joke.
Yeah. I was trying to prevent that, but there are so many things that pop up in my head.
Yeah. But we don't want to strike a wrong note.
Yeah, huh? There you go again. Yeah. But there are so many logical parts in this business modeling, like you're saying, the guitar library. But there are also this is a quest. So in a typical quest, it's not a walk in the park. We need to find out where the mm-hmm. where there is a hindrance, where there is a barrier. And I think one has to do with skill. Also, an interesting question is about, if you bring it back and refurbish it, what parts can easily be refurbished? In this case, you already explained it a bit.
Yeah.
But there are also parts that are easily worn out, right? I mean, talking about these strings.
Yeah. The strings are the things that are replaced most. There are guitar players that have really, when they're on stage, and they're really sweaty conditions, of course, because they're the lights nowadays less warm because they're LED lights,
LED
of course.
LED is bringing so many.
It's better, but still, it's most of the times it's warm. People sweat, and there are guitar players that have aggressive sweat. That's how they call it, and they switch strings every show.
Really? So aggressive sweat means that you have more acid in your
Yeah, and the strings, they just dull out. They just don't sound that crispy and chimey anymore. So they just switch out strings for every show.
Yeah. And then what do they do with these strings?
Where they throw them away.
And they throw them away.
Yeah.
To the crowd, and they're happy to.
No, they just throw them away. I don't know. That's also an interesting part, of course. Where do they go when you throw them? It depends, of course, on which country you are. But within the Netherlands, it is metal.
It is metal. What is it, kind of metal is it?
I think it's nickel.
Nickel. Yeah. We don't have a lot of nickel mines in the Netherlands, do we?
No.
And then those who produce it, they are typically from virgin materials making this. Or
good question.
Yeah, you don't know.
I don't know. That's one of the things I have to check out.
I mean, we
are there recycled strings?
I mean, that's an all new podcast almost.
Uh-huh.
Talk about the recycled content of materials. Are they out there? Are they the same quality? But if we discuss the total endeavor of the circular guitar, then there is a bit of a hierarchy.
Okay.
Because we already discussed.
Okay, now we get some structure.
We need to make sure everybody who listens to this that we are heading for something, right? I mean, yeah. So the first thing we discussed was about refuse. I mean, we can say you can stop playing guitar. That's a very good thing for the environment. It's not so good for humankind.
yeah.
Because we all need music. So if we agree that the guitars are needed for human society, then the next step would be, how do we preserve value, like we just mentioned?
Yeah.
And if we want to preserve value, wouldn't it be logical to make a product that can last forever?
Yeah.
And if a product lasts forever, we mean everything. We mean the energy that's put in, the materials that's put in, the labor that's put in, and to design something that can last forever without losing value. Well, then you have two directions there.
Mm-hmm.
One is about the business model.
Yeah.
Who is incentivized to do this? Because if you do this and you put in a lot of quality, you never see your customer again. And then you might
end up with the quality. Yeah.
You can also conclude that, okay, my job is done. I provided everybody with a fender and everybody's happy. So we're closing the factory.
Yeah.
Or you could switch to a model where you go much more to services and that you get the value out of that. And then the other direction we're heading now a bit is, okay, if we look at the product itself, it's used, so it's worn out. So we have to make sure that it can easily be refurbished. And yeah, you were saying, it's the same model like in 1950. So in this case, it's much easier. It's not like you have to, the old guitars can still be upgraded again with either new strings, new frets, etc. And that's also a direction you need to discuss then. So on one hand, the business model, what makes it interesting to preserve value, kind of platform thinking, kind of refurbished solutions. And then to the materials, much more discussing what do we put in there?
Mm-hmm.
What's the quality in the production stage? Because new guitars are still made. So we now can influence the design even more if we want to.
Yeah. But I'm also thinking the best guitar is a used guitar, especially because the good quality guitars are built to last a lifetime. So why buy a new one if there are plenty used ones available?
Let's start then with to conclude that there are enough guitars in the world right now, perhaps the 6-7%.
Yeah, all the guitar players that are watching now are now switching off.
Yeah.
Enough guitars?
Never enough.
I mean, the name of my shop is Never Enough Strats, Enough Telly. So
there are
never enough guitars.
Okay.
Now, I can even imagine, because the fun thing, of course, is that the most part of the guitar is wood.
Yeah.
So one of my questions is also, is this maybe... Is it possible to make a CO2 negative guitar that absorbs CO2 instead
of... CO2 embedded, of course, yeah.
Because it's wood, I mean...
Yeah. And that's... I mean, wouldn't it be nice just to invite somebody with a circular design background to discuss also the bill of materials and to go into depth about, okay, yeah, wood is CO2 embedded. Or then you're using nickel, which is quite energy intensive, and especially if you have aggressive sweat.
Yeah.
aggressive sweat is very bad for the environment.
Yeah. We need it, yeah.
But I'm curious if I have aggressive sweat, but I will never know. So wouldn't it be nice just to go into depth of that and to see, okay, CO2. Bit of preparation for this podcast, I try to find out if there are already circular guitars there in terms of materials. And then I thought back about when I worked together with Kurt Zachariasen. He is a real estate developer of Delta Developments. And he worked closely together with Bill McDonough. I don't know if you know Bill McDonough. Well, he is the inventor, together with Brancard, of Cradle to Cradle. And he's an architect himself. And Brancard is much more a chemist, I think. I don't know. Yeah, an engineer at least. So they came up with the idea, we have to design stuff that are non-toxic and that where materials are can be used ever and ever. So they have quite a strict program about the Cradle to Cradle program, where you can certify products and saying, this is Cradle to Cradle, top level, or the best there is, etc. And Kurt, as a present to, because he's a guitar lover himself, he got a Gibson made from sustainable wood.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the question is, what is sustainable wood? Because it sounds like wood is always sustainable, but well, we have to find out then. And then he gave a guitar to Bill McDonough, which was also a Fender, a bass guitar. How do you say that?
Yeah, bass guitar. Yeah,
bass guitar. So he came up with a cradle to cradle certified bass guitar. So it would be interesting to, together with this design, with this circular designer, to have a discussion on what makes it circular by material. We're discussing a lot about business modeling, but what makes the material circular?
Okay, so that's somebody I have to talk to.
Well, it wouldn't it be great?
Yeah,
I mean, if you
it would, yeah, I mean, sure.
Yeah, he could tell his own, he could share his own quest, because he put a lot of work in that, because it's the first of a kind, and then always people who go for it first of a kind always have to endure a lot of hurdles.
Yeah, they do have to do all the difficult stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I have to think about and develop the business model, the library model of people being able to use a guitar, pay for the use of the guitar, and also the switching, because I think a lot of guitar players want to try out new stuff. So that's one thing. The other thing is the materials. So I have to check how sustainable are these secondhand guitars made.
So exactly.
Kurt will be a good one to talk to. But I also think I have to just inquire at Fender itself. They probably have something like a sustainability statement, or, well, I'll just ask them.
They're probably proud to talk about it, because it is a product to be proud about.
Yeah. Who do you think I also should talk to? Because there are probably other entrepreneurs that are already have a sustainable product that's not the same, but comparable, or that have the same had the same quest of finding out how does this work, this new sustainable business model.
If you divide this question two pathways, one is about the product itself and the other one is about the business model, we still need to discuss a lot of things about this business model, right? We discussed the scale, we discussed the fact that labor is costly, so is that possible? But there are also a lot of legal aspects that come to that. There are logistical questions.
Love legal stuff.
Who doesn't?
Oh my God.
I mean, yeah, we can.
Well, this was the final episode. We're going to do legal stuff now.
We're going to discuss all the articles that are there. One person that comes to mind that can talk about this in a very appealing way, a legal counselor.
Yeah.
I have to come up with his name. He used to work. I will come back to that later, because
check LinkedIn.
that's the thing about Werner Runge. Now he comes to mind. Werner Runge used to work for Ellenhove. He still works there.
Okay.
And he did a lot of research on what it means in legal aspects for as a service.
Okay.
So that would be you can discuss about that legal part.
But that's one of the things that, I mean, if I think about this endeavor and I am pondering about it when I lie in bed, this is the part that I'm like, okay, so I'm going to give somebody a guitar.
Exactly.
That's like 3,000 or 4,000 euros worth.
Yeah.
They pay me a monthly fee. What happens if they, I never see them again, if they don't pay, if I...
And how do you keep track of that? What do you do when they are not paying?
When they don't take good care of it, when they're obviously abusing it, because, well, hey, it's not my guitar, I just pay like 100 or 200 euros a month or something like that.
Yeah, psychological part of it, which is also interesting.
Yeah.
Because if they don't own it, are they taking care of it as much as they would normally do?
Yeah.
This legal part also relates to another favorite topic, which is the financial part. Because if you own all these guitars and you are the library and you will provide guitars as a service, then you have a lot of assets.
Yeah, and you need more money.
you need a lot of money because it's all on your balance sheet.
Yeah.
So you have this insurance risk of preserving that value. But you also have, it's quite capital intensive to own all these guitars. And then you have to pay a rent for it. And who's going to provide you with that capital? And what do they want in return? How can you back up that financial part? So it would also be interesting to discuss with some experts that are really into financing the circular economy.
Yeah.
And then Elisa Achterberg comes to mind.
Okay.
She's an expert in that, but then also people from some Dutch banks really have put a lot of effort in understanding what it needs, because the typical normal risk assessment don't always apply.
Yeah, I can imagine, because they're based on all the historical data of the linear economy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so we have two fun topics, the legal part and the finance part, to make sure that I will still be liking this quest.
But I promise you,
also need some entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Well, I promise you that the names I just mentioned, they can bring it in really an appealing way for you.
Okay,
you will have fun. You will have fun in the meantime and learn a lot from it.
Okay.
But I can imagine that you also need entrepreneurs that went through the same sort of endeavor. And then an evergreen on this is, of course, Mud Jeans. They came up with the Lisa Jeans. You pay in the beginning, you paid, I think, €5 per month to lease a jeans. And you can also discuss with Bert van Son, who was the founder of that, whether that was a good idea or not. and then he can at least share his lessons learned and see if it would be more applicable to a guitar, for instance. But we also need to think about an entrepreneur that has a product that is a bit more similar to a guitar. So we have to think that through, don't we?
Yeah.
Because jeans is something else. It's really, and this is more, it's easier to preserve the value of a guitar than for a jeans. So we have to think.
More expensive.
And more expensive.
Yeah.
That's also a difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden it's worthwhile to travel it around the world and to, and that's also, you need to talk to an entrepreneur that has had to deal with the being a platform, providing clients all over the world. That means something. Also, if you want to make it sustainable, you have to think how to transport all these guitars around the globe.
Mm-hmm. Transport.
And perhaps you can even discuss with somebody who knows a lot about transportation and CO2, a lower emission transport and all that. But I think if you have several entrepreneurs here, which is always fun, they can share also their ideas. Well, perhaps even a typical platform that is quite successful in the Netherlands is Swapfiets.
Oh, yeah.
The Swap bikes, Bicycle.
Swap Bikes.
Swap Bikes.
That's a good one. Yeah.
So it would be nice to discuss also with the founders how they...
Which was also a business model where the first time they entered the Netherlands, everybody has a bike. Everybody has two bikes in the Netherlands. So why do we need a rental bike? And it's a great success.
What comes to mind is that also, I mean, you can learn the most from entrepreneurs that were first timers, right?
Mm.
They made all the mistakes.
Yeah,
all the mistakes.
They had all the pitfalls.
So two entrepreneurs come to mind. One is I forgot his name, but from PeerB, you know them. It's a sharing platform.
Yeah.
So his promise of his business model is that you have so many things in the shed, you only use it once per year. That's not the case in the guitars, of course, but in my case, definitely true that the drill, I use it once per year or even less if I'm lucky. And then it's easy to share it on the platform and my neighbor can just borrow it from me and I pay a small amount for insurance and a small amount for making this happen on the platform, PeerB. So that would be interesting because he knows a lot about logistics and how to make sure that the demand and supply were brought together on the platform and how to do that in a sort of a community kind of way.
Yeah.
And the other that comes to mind, because we're wearing a headphone right now here.
Yep.
And there are two fellas that started from there right after their study with circular headphones. It's now called Repeat.
Okay.
I was already mentioning how clumsy I am But I received a couple of days ago a package via the regular post box.
Yeah.
With new parts on it because they were worn out after 4 years. So I had to replace them myself. And they designed it in such a way that even I can do it.
Huh?
So
even clumsy people can do it.
Even the
then they did it a good job.
The least skilled persons can do it. So perhaps I'm a dummy. They test it out. If I can do it, everybody can do it.
Yeah.
No, but it's fun because they thought about how to transport all these spare parts. And in this case, it was easier. But I can imagine for strings, you can also send them by mail or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
But what would be good to discuss with these two, well, I would say students, but they're not students anymore. They're doing this now for the last, I think, 6-7 years or so.
Oh, wow.
So they're quite experienced entrepreneurs by now.
Cool. Okay, so we have the Mud Jeans Repeat Swap Bike, I think they're called internationally.
Okay.
Pierby. We have to talk about transport. We have to talk about finance and legal. So 7 things so far. So we could be talking for, even because we have so much more to discuss, we could be talking for hours. We're already almost talking for an hour now.
Oh, really?
So this, yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
My question to you is, because you're my starting guide, you're my first guide to tell me, oh, you have to look over there, maybe there, and here's a nice path, check it out. Can I get back to you?
Yeah, of course.
To say, when I'm stuck, when I'm overwhelmed, when I don't know anymore what to do.
We'll do this quest together. I mean,
that would
of
be
course,
great.
You are in the lead. I'm the bass guitar then, player. I'm in the back. I'm the shy guy in the back, making sure that it all blends
okay,
well.
Cool.
No, I love to. And I after this session and this talk, a lot of things pop in my mind that I will come back to you also. So I will do a little bit of research myself. So if I find something interesting, because I also know some persons that are really passionate about playing guitar and are in the circle economy. So it would be nice also, well, to hear a bit from them. So I will give them a phone call and see, okay, this is the quest Glenn is going for.
Yeah, because that's, of course, also a big question for me. Does anybody want such a kind of a service?
Yeah.
Or not? Because if nobody wants it, then well.
This is very important.
It's a really short quest.
We're talking about business models. We can talk with a lot of experts. We can talk about a lot of entrepreneurs. But what I keep on saying also, when I start up a new business, let's talk with the customers if they really need this or what they actually need. Start listening to them. So if you can find some typical customers for you, it would be great to hear also from them.
Well, the fun thing is I have some customers, so I can ask them if this would be something they would be interested in. So I have some homework.
Yeah, and same here. So I'll do some homework as well. And
great, Guido.
I will come back to you when I find somebody with a solution that you are working on.
Super. Guido, thanks a lot for being my first guide and continuing on this journey with me. And you, of course, thanks a lot for watching or listening to this second podcast, The Circular Guitar. The quest goes on. We just started out, so keep following us.